This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about the homeless on Keeping the Faith with Father Tom Royer, who is the priest from St. Mary's Catholic Church in Champaign, and with Reverend Jeff Trask, who's one of the pastors at New Covenant Christian Fellowship in Champaign. Both of you are, and your congregations are very involved in helping the homeless locally here in Champaign-Urbana. And of course, this is a national problem. It's not just here, but perhaps some of the situations here in Champaign-Urbana will be helpful to people who are listening elsewhere. Father Tom, let's begin with you. You had a letter in the newspaper recently, and there's been letters about the situation in the paper and a lot of comment on talk radio locally, because your church has stepped in to be very helpful to local homeless. Tell us how this situation happened.
Well, I became aware of the Safe Haven being at Catholic Worker House. I'm on the steering committee there, and I was aware that they had to move on, the tent city. So
these were tents that were set up in the backyard of the Catholic Worker House on Randolph. Yes.
Right. So I felt that we have the space. We have a facility, a space for the tents. We have the facility that has restrooms. I thought that certainly a parish could practice the works of mercy on its own property without interference from city officials, but I was incorrect.
So what was the first indication you had that when some of the homeless people who were staying in tents at the Catholic Worker House and then came to the property of St. Mary's, that there were problems from the city government?
Well, I received a letter from the zoning administrator telling me that was it was addressed on August the 13th. They came to St. Mary's on that Wednesday, whatever date that was. That would be about the 10th, I think. And he says that you must cease permitting this illegal use at this address, at our address. If we fail to cease permitting this illegal use, we would incur fines, an injunction and fines up to $750 a day for each day the violation continues. So that day was a Friday, the 21st was a Friday. So I told them that they can move indoors into our parish center. And, you know, you might think that, well, that's an improvement. They actually have a roof over their heads.
Sure.
But they're sleeping on the floor. One of the values of the tent is its privacy. And privacy is really important.
Sure.
There's no privacy there. The other thing is, with a tent, you can stash your gear. As it is now, they're using the garage, and people have their stuff stacked all over the place. It's really chaotic as it is now. So it's a step backward from
now, how many people are we talking about who are, at this point are not able to be in other homeless shelters in town?
Sure.
They were in these tents, and now they're in your parish center.
Okay. I think that now it varies from day to day.
Of course.
But it's in the neighborhood of, I think it's from 17 to 19.
Males, females, adults, children?
There are no children, but there are mostly male, and then there are some females.
Uh-huh. So you not only have the difficulty of no privacy, of if it were just one gender, you have both.
Sure, so, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Okay. I want to of course, give the phone numbers for listeners to call and be part of this conversation. But before I do that, let me let people hear how Jeff Trask and his congregation, New Covenant Christian Fellowship, are involved in this, because you live right down the street from mm-hmm. the Catholic Worker House on Randolph, and when they had the problem with the tent city, they also suddenly had city inspectors coming in and closed down their soup kitchen. Is that correct? And then your church is offering to have a place where they can give food out now since this.
Yeah, the history with the Catholic Worker House and the soup kitchen piece of it is actually, I'm not sure all the details of it, but I don't know how much of the city had to do with that as opposed to them having difficulty trying to do two ministries in one place. They have a resident living situation for women and children in the same facility, so it was kind of difficult for them to do both. And I think that was one of the main reasons why they ended up trying to move the soup kitchen piece of that. What we've been able to do so far is provide a location for the homeless to receive some sack lunches. They liked our location. You know, we're right down the street from the previous location, so we're not too far from where they were. People are familiar with New Covenant in general because we've been there for a while, and people know to come. They can come get help and assistance from our congregation as well. So it seemed to be a good fit. The little few of the implications that were involved of making sure that public health was going to be okay with it, and we're able to, you know, abide by all the rules that's out there in the city, so we don't run into any complications or problems too. And we were able to do that at this point to provide sandwiches for people. We won't be able to do more than that at this point because of the enhanced rules for providing hot meals, but we're doing what we can do so far, and it's going pretty well at this point.
It amuses me. I guess it's more ironic than amusement, but that people who have been trying to survive, in some cases, off things that they pull out of dumpsters, food that they pull out of dumpsters behind grocery stores and restaurants, mm-hmm. That a church can't use their kitchen to serve these people. They have to come up to restaurant codes or something crazy, I think.
Yeah, and it's a tough tightrope to bear there. You know, you got situations where if you get a group of people who get sick, they're going to want to know who to track down for it. But you wish there would be some type of middle ground somewhere where it wouldn't be as difficult to do this. That the process to feed people would be facilitated by some common sense rules and regulations that could be followed, but not to the extremes at which some of these rules take you.
But you now are already providing sack lunches?
Yes, we have gotten past all the different processes in which to do that. We started this last Tuesday, and we're providing sack lunches for, I would estimate right now about 30 or to 40 people are coming each day so far. I'm sure that number will increase soon over time as word gets out that we're providing that for people. We're not doing it every day like the Catholic Worker House was doing it. They had 7 days a week. Needless to say, we can't do Sundays because we have worship on Sundays. And Saturdays are kind of problematic, too. So we're just starting off with Monday through Friday.
The Catholic Worker House, for those who don't know, and we did try to get a representative from there, and we thought we had one. But at the last minute, he called me about 4 o'clock and said he couldn't be part of this discussion today. But the Catholic Worker House for many years has been providing, as was indicated, a living place for a few women and children and food and some social services for homeless men as well. That's only one of the places in the community that provides assistance. The woman's place will provide shelter for women who are in abusive situations, and women in transition is a place for women and children who are needing short-term care and are transitioning into a better situation with perhaps employment or moving into another facility. The city of Urbana does have some social services provided for people who are homeless. The city of Champaign, however, has not. I think it's accurate that they no longer provide any money for social services. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, there was a point in time where the money, social service planning money that they had, they started using it for some other means. I don't know recently if that got changed back over or not. I think it might have. But I'm not sure. But I know for a period of time that, yeah, all the money that was going to various social service agencies for things like homelessness was being redirected for a while.
And, of course, the Time Center helps homeless men who are in transition, but only homeless men who meet certain criteria. They receive government money and state money and federal money and so forth. And so they can help men who are willing and able to be in certain programs to work towards bettering themselves. But people who are severely mentally ill, people who are addicted to drugs or alcohol have problems in those, getting accepted in those kind of programs. Well, let me give the phone number so other people who are listening, perhaps people from the Catholic Worker House who are are listening would give us a call. The numbers here in the studio are 333-9455. That's a local number for folks in the Champaign-Urbana area where this program is broadcasting from. People farther away, if it's a long-distance call, do use our 800 number, 1-800-222-9455, and perhaps your experience will be helpful to us in this conversation as well. We are eager to have listeners join in with our guests today, and let me reintroduce them. Father Tom Royer from St. Mary's Catholic Church on Park Street. Is that,
Park Street,
that right? In Champaign, very close to Wright Street. And Jeff Trask, Reverend Jeff Trask, one of the pastors of New Covenant Christian Fellowship on Randolph. We have a couple callers already on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
I want to say everyone is really very pleased with the help that New Covenant has given us in setting up our SAC lunch program.
Now, is this someone from the Catholic Worker House?
We are from what is now called the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen.
The Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, all
yes.
right.
And that is now housed at New Covenant, and they've been very nice to allow us to give out the SAC lunches. And I want people to know that the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, which was ousted from the Catholic Worker House, has taken on a new life and is hoping to get access to a place or to purchase a place of our own where we can once again offer everyone the hot lunches that they once had, because we went from serving, 50 to 70 people a day to 70 to 100 people a day, and suddenly that was too many people, and instead of serving anyone, we were told we could serve no one.
Now, who exactly is the we?
These are the people that staffed the soup kitchen.
So these are volunteers. No one was paid.
Volunteers.
Okay.
And there was a different crew every day. They cooked their own food, put food on the table, and got to know the homeless and the disadvantaged, and there was a real bond there. And
about how many volunteers were involved in that when it was at the Catholic Worker House?
I'll bet that we must have 70 different people that came through the week, because we had different crews every day, and most of us are retired, and so sometimes we're on vacation or ill or whatever, so we would always have other people to call in to help.
Now, if listeners today would want to help with the new location at New Covenant Christian Fellowship where the sandwiches are being distributed, who would they contact?
Well, they can just show up, actually, between the hours of 10 and 1. We start making sandwiches at 10.
Monday through Friday,
Monday through Friday, between 10 and 1. Uh-huh. And New Covenant has been wonderful about that.
And that's Randolph and
White Street.
Okay.
And then the SAC lunches are given out between 11 and 12:30. Cleanup is done after that, and we're out of there by 1. Or they could call this number, which is 377-4776. And we're always willing to have new volunteers, although since we're not cooking, we don't really need as many people as we did before.
Sure.
But we're hoping to find a place we can purchase. If anyone has an idea about a place that is a restaurant that's closed or something that we could possibly afford, otherwise we'll have to either construct something or do a lot of renovations.
Well, thank you very much for that information. Let me repeat the phone number, 377-4776, to help with the soup kitchen, the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen that's now providing sandwiches at New Covenant Christian Fellowship. Thank you for that call, and we have another caller waiting on line number two. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello. I'm also a volunteer with Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, and I would just like to reiterate everything that was said by your previous caller. A lot of what she said I was going to say, so I don't have to repeat that. But I would like to correct a misconception, something I think I just heard, and you may have been the one who said it, Reverend, and that was that the soup kitchen was ousted by the city of Champaign, and we were not. The decision was made by the St. Jude Catholic Worker House Steering Committee.
I see. So, well, I may have gotten the wrong impression from reading articles in the paper, which talked about the kind of alterations that the Catholic Worker House is having to go through to meet codes.
That may be so. Yeah. But the actual decision to terminate, and that was the word that was used, to terminate the steering committee or the soup kitchen was made by the steering committee. And if you read the editorial that just appeared last week on the editorial page, I think it was done by Jim Dye. I think that speaks to a little bit to the history and to the support that is now being asked for from the community, to serve, to help Daily Bread. We also had a wonderful letter from Captain, the Chief of Police, Finney. And so we're very grateful to the News Gazette's following our struggle, and it's exciting too. It's starting something, brand new all over again, and also the support we got from the Chief of Police and the Police Department. So,
I noticed the article in the paper from the Chief Finney of Champaign Police was very supportive of the kind of work the Catholic Worker House had done and the soup kitchen, and they'd been providing an officer to help keep order during the serving of the lunch meals, and he indicated the police would continue to do that. Jeff, has that happened since they've been serving the sandwiches at New Covenant Fellowship?
Yeah, I haven't seen it myself, but I've only been there a couple of days.
Okay.
And right now the word's just getting out, so it's starting to build up slowly. And I'm sure once we get to that point, I'm sure they'll probably be willing to continue to do what they've been doing.
I would like to add that Police Chief Finney did come by the first day, which was last Wednesday. He did drop by and wished us all well, and that was very nice for him to do that. When we were in operation at St. Jude's, the police who came in were not a haughty, overpowering presence. They came in. Many of our guests knew them, and they chatted, and were just by them being there, the order was inadvertently, or how should I say, unobtrusively carried out. So they were very helpful to us, and we look forward to having a place where they can come again. I don't really see the need for them now to actually be there, because people just come in and they get their sack lunches and we chat, but it's not like there's a sit down where they, actually spend a whole lot of time, because they don't. And I guess I don't want to belabor it, because the other speaker did speak to it, but we're very, very grateful to New Covenant for giving us that space and allowing us to come in and make the sandwiches and to serve. That's, it's wonderful. And, you know, we kind of have a resurgence of hope, and we know we're going to find a place to, you know, where we can be permanently there and have our sit-down hot lunches. I mean, we're looking forward to finding a place to do that again.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate the comment. Jeff, when New Covenant Church, New Covenant Fellowship, made the decision to offer your space for this purpose, was it much of a difficult decision? You have church officers who are probably part of all that, as well as the pastors.
Right. We have a pastoral leadership team that discusses these kind of matters, but a couple of different people really took it on. Leanne Kelly and Heather Dillon did a lot of the organizing to get us up to code to different things we had to do. Kind of coordinated different efforts within the congregation to make it happen. And then everyone just kind of took on a different day to make sure we had coverage, to make sure people were there to oversee it. But, you know, this is the Daily Bread folks were in a situation where they really needed a place to provide lunches. They were willing to do a lot themselves to make sure it happened. There's a number of issues that you don't think about when you first start a project that come up. And as those issues were coming up, they really took it on and made sure things got done and make sure that we can still do it. But yeah, we are in that area that we're in for a reason. New Covenant Fellowship felt from a long time ago that they wanted to plant themselves in an area where they can serve the community. And that's why we're there. So these are the kind of things that we like to do, and we want to show mercy and justice any way possible. And this is a situation for us that it came to us. We didn't have to create it, but we were able just to provide the facilities for it.
Right. And Father Tom, St. Mary's Church has been in Champaign-Urbana for a long time. How long?
Well, it began in 1857. So it was the first Catholic church in the county.
And you've been there as priest for how long?
Since 1857. No, it's since 1973.
Since 1973, so you are one of the longest-serving pastors in the area.
They've not been able to get rid of me.
We have another call waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith from Urbana. Yes, go ahead. Line number one.
Hey. Hi, my name is Jeff Hoover, and I apologize. I missed the early part of the conversation, but a friend of mine, my wife, rather, told me that Center for Women in Transition was mentioned as a resource.
Right.
And I just wanted to make sure, you know, that I'm responsible. I'm on the board of directors for a women's fund. So I'm responsible for making sure the word gets out that we also are a resource for women and children who are displaced specifically by domestic violence.
Yes. A women's fund was mentioned as well, but I'm happy to have you as a board member tell us a little bit more about that. You are limited to accepting women who have been in abusive situations. Is that correct?
I believe that's true. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you ever have women who, because of their extreme situation, may say they are just to have a place that's safe?
Well, I wouldn't really be allowed to comment on that. If it was true,
yeah.
But there are lots of programs for people who don't necessarily need a place to stay, and of course we do serve the male community as well. It's just less prevalent.
But you're set up to serve women who are in abusive situations.
For the most part, yes.
Right, and you want to give a phone number where people can call if they're in that kind of a situation?
I would love to. The domestic violence hotline is area code 217-384-4390.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. We're talking today on Keeping the Faith about the situation with the homeless in Champaign-Urbana, specifically with Father Tom Royer, who's a priest from St. Mary's Church, and with Reverend Jeff Trask, one of the pastors at New Covenant Fellowship in Champaign. Father Tom, let's talk a little bit more about St. Mary's. It is as you indicated, the oldest Catholic parish in this county. You've had this long history in this community, and you talked about the works of mercy that you feel you're doing as you respond to the homeless here at this time. How has your congregation been involved in the past with helping people in need?
Well, I find them very cooperative. I would say that probably our probably one of the more significant things we've been able to do is to have a sister community. Actually, there are five small communities in the mountains of El Salvador, and we've gone with delegations. And since we began that ministry, which was 20 years ago, we have been going down each summer with a medical staff to offer clinics in each of the settlements. And we're supporting a number of projects in the communities. It's very, very poor. It was an area that was in the war zone during the 12 years of that civil war in El Salvador. And when we first went in, they were just now, they were trying to kind of build up again after the absolute tragedy of the war. In any case, the nutrition program is one of our efforts there that we're providing. There's a woman doctor in San Salvador who has designed the program, and we're supporting it, and it's about $20,000 a year. Mm. So there's other projects as well. But I would say that that stands out as a wonderful example of what the people have taken on and have supported so well mm-hmm. over the years.
And you've been, as you mentioned, on the board of the Catholic Worker House. Tell us a little bit about the Catholic Worker House movement, and then I want to get to another couple of phone calls. People
okay.
waiting.
It began in the Depression when a woman named Dorothy Day, with the help of a sort of an itinerant preacher named Peter Morin, started, providing some basic services to the unemployed in New York City. And it's pretty amazing how it has developed over the years, so that you have Catholic worker houses now all over the country. They're small groups, there's a whole variety of different kinds of services that they're providing.
And they're kind of independent of Catholic parishes? Is that the situation, typically?
That's their glory.
I see. It's a lay movement.
It's a lay movement. And yeah. What happens when creative, dedicated people get together, it's beautiful to behold. And I think that that's a very good example of this. And for many people, it's been a sort of a transition. From that, they go on to something else. But I think it has not only been a service to others, it has been a place of formation. And the important thing is that it's a community, that is dedicated to provide hospitality. Hospitality is a word.
And it's basically all volunteers, right?
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Right. We have a couple of callers waiting. Let's go to Champagne in line number one.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm glad you're talking about the homeless today. I have a couple of questions. First of all, does anyone have any concept of how many homeless are in our community? And is there any coordination among the groups who are working with the homeless? And I just wanted to make a comment that I was a little upset about the tent community getting so much attention, because I realize there are so few in comparison to the many, you know, who don't speak up. But on the other hand, that has brought this problem to the forefront, and I'm glad about that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments and questions. The question was the numbers of the homeless. Any ideas?
I think it's a very good question, and I don't know the numbers. And having been involved with the Safe Haven tent community, I'm just getting kind of just the beginning of an understanding of the problem. The extent of it. I got a call from somebody in the East Coast who's writing a book, and he got wind of this through the internet, and he had some questions he wanted to ask. But the name of the book that he's writing is Mortgaged and Armed, and he is taking statistics nationwide, And he's saying that by 2012, there will be 9 million foreclosures. So there's a lot of people who will be homeless, mortgaged. And armed means that we are an armed society. And what he's looking at is that this may feed into some sort of a very serious result. But anyway, to get back to the question, I don't know. Would you have any idea?
I don't know the exact numbers. I think the difficulty is twofold. One is defining homelessness. There's various levels of that. I mean, if you are, in a situation where you're living with someone who's you're not normally living with, but they decided to take you in, as long as things are okay, that could be someone considered homeless. All the way to the second problem with it is those people who are kind of invisible to us. There's people sleeping under bridges and parks and all over the place that we don't do a census on, so we don't really know a lot of times where the homeless really are. So those two things kind of complicate those numbers, but I'm sure there's more people out there who need housing than we have housing available, and I can tell you that because we get many people come to New Covenant Fellowship looking for a place to stay, and we go through the list of different possibilities, and many times those places are full, and we really don't have many answers for people at that point.
There have been attempts to count the homeless locally and nationally, and there are some national organizations that will give you estimates of between 1 and 2 million homeless adults in the country at a given time. Of course, that's gone up a lot, as Father Time indicates, as the economy has gone down.
Mm-hmm.
Other groups that focus just on children talk about 1.5 million children who are homeless. There are many who are really undetectable, as you indicate, Jeff. People sleeping in cars and as you say, in maybe fairly intolerable situations, where they're on somebody's couch and aren't really very welcome. But the numbers are hard to know. And in terms of coordination, yes, there's some coordination among established agencies, but maybe someone will call in and tell us more about that. Well, let's go to line number 2 from Champaign. Yes.
It really well, but all those cabbage vegetables.
Hello, we're talking to you on line number 2 in Champaign.
Yeah, you can leave them.
You're on the air.
I had cola. Oh, is that me?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been involved with the Safe Haven, and I've hired them to work on my house and yard. And they have a wide variety of skills. They're very dependable. They police their own community. And I think they're a real improvement over just stray homeless people here and there. So I really commend the work that the organizers have been doing with this community. And also, I have a phone number for Safe Haven. They're kind of an official phone. I'm not sure if it's okay to give it out, though, for people to call if they want yard work and the like done.
Well, if you're not authorized to give out that number, you'd better not. But perhaps someone from Safe Haven themselves who answers that phone might give us that number. That would be great.
Yeah, I called and asked, but they weren't answering right now. But I'd also like to say I think it's pretty ridiculous that a person can pitch a tent in their backyard and sleep out there all summer if they want. As long as they have another home, nobody cares. But as soon as they don't have another home, then it's illegal. So,
Father Tom, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I agree with you. I think it is ridiculous. And the point made by one of the council members about the tents was that it's substandard. Agreed, it is substandard. And the reason that he gave to want to uphold the city code was for reasons of health and safety. So, okay, take away the tent, which is substandard. Now talk to me about health and safety. I mean, you're taking away what is the first step towards something a little more substantial.
A little protection there is.
Oh, yeah, right.
Well, thank you for that call. Appreciate it. We have a couple other people waiting. Let's go to line number 1. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Okay, hi. I just wanted to let the person know who asked the questions about if there were other projects going on that we have something called the Eco Ecumenical Garden Group. And this is our first year, and we've started gardens at a woman's place, Women's in Transition, the Catholic Worker House, and, the Mennonite Church. And so we're providing the vegetables that come out of that to these places. And it's also involving all different faiths, Muslim, Jewish, Mennonite, Methodist, Presbyterian, Catholic. Everybody's invited to volunteer. So if they want to know anything more about it, they could call Wesley United Methodist Church, would be able to refer them to a number.
Okay, and that's 344-1120 for Wesley United Methodist Church for the ECHO Interfaith Garden Group. Well, yes. Thank you very much for sharing that information.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. And we have another caller on, this time on line 3 from Champaign. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Father Tom, I was impressed to hear that you have been here so long, and your tenure should bring with it some wisdom about a question that I'd like to put to you, and that is, do you have any perspective that you would care to shed on the tension between public policy and private policy or private practice? I'm talking about this long ongoing argument within American culture about just exactly what should public money and public law and ordinances in this case, what their relationship should be. The right-wing argument, both political, cultural, and religious, is that either the poor are responsible for their own plight, or if they're not, then all of these wonderful creative organizations that have been calling in to advertise can fill the gap, and so you should be celebrating that and not giving a hard time to the city council. I've heard so many of these arguments in so many convoluted forms in my lifetime. I'm very interested to hear what your perspective is, having struggled with this since 1973.
Well, you mentioned the, I forget the word you used, but the tension or the struggle with city officials. This has been quite an education for me to attempt to be in conversation with city officials about the Safe Haven community, and to find that they are not really very interested in it. The effort to provide a place, and it is minimal what we're offering, you know, a space for their tents, and then now they're indoors, has been really been met with an incredible kind of by the city. The official said when once we move them inside that they're okay for now. Well, gee, that's very nice. And that as long as there's not more than 20. Also that we are willing to let's see, I'm going to you can meet with us, make an appointment, we can discuss ways that your congregation can help the homeless in ways that also conform to city codes, which really says that Safe Haven is out of bounds, because it is out of bounds, because it's not that it is substandard housing that they're aiming at eventually with these small modular homes, say, or cabins. But so the city officials that I have heard from through letters seem to be in denial that there is a problem, or at least they don't want to deal with it, see. I don't feel that there's been any movement toward seeking a solution. And that disappoints me. I think it can be better than it has been.
Let me remind listeners, this is a live program here on WILL AM 580. I'm Steve Shoemaker. You're listening to Keeping the Faith, and we're talking about the homeless situation in Champaign, Illinois, primarily with two local, a pastor and a priest, who are trying to help in this situation and are having some difficulty. This is, however, as Father Tom just indicated, a national situation. There are ideas all around of ways to respond to homeless by providing small, modular, perhaps movable structures, tents, someone who knew this program was going to be on the air today was telling me about a group called EDAR. Everyone deserves a roof. Tents on wheels that are lockable that they're experimenting with in California. If people want to look at that, they can go to edar.org online. Or Katrina Cottage Housing that's for people who've tried to come up with superior alternatives to the FEMA trailers that were so infamous during the Katrina disaster. Tiny House Design. FourSeasonShelters.com. These are all places that are trying to deal with this issue nationally. And I appreciate the person who sent me the email with all of these indications. The last is particularly ironic because these are portable shelters for horses.
Okay.
They've developed and made them very inexpensively and yet protect the animals during the cold winters.
Sure.
But we don't have a system for people.
Hmm. Well, maybe if you had a horse, you could stay in the cabin with the horse, and that way you can avoid official scorn.
Yeah.
Well, part of the question, too, Steve, is when we look at homelessness, what are those things in this country that we consider a right versus a privilege? You can look at health care. You look at many other systems that we have here. And that is the basic question for a lot of where you stand on how you think about these things.
Right. And what's your opinion?
On the subject, I think for the basic needs of life, like shelter, like health care, I think there should be a right. Every human being should have the ability to be able to live. And we have systems in place where this allows people to do that. Healthcare is one of my passions in particular, and our system is designed where, according to Kaiser Foundation, 18,000 people die every year because they don't have health insurance. I think that's a travesty among a nation that spends more than double in healthcare than the next country in line with that. So I think that's where a lot of us need to, especially as Christians, need to really consider those things that we think are rights or privileges. And if we think it's a right, that we should be advocates and we should be pushing for some changes.
We have another caller waiting on line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello?
Yes, line one.
Yeah, I tuned in a little late, so I heard that Father Royer is on. And is there an expert in the tent community? On too?
We tried, but we don't have an expert, but we have Father Royer and Jeff Trask. Jeff is pastor at New Covenant Fellowship Church. It's providing the SAC lunches, helping provide a place for the SAC lunch distribution that was at Catholic Worker House.
I see. Okay, well, I have a comment and a question. The comment is that this country has a kind of a sorry history of putting people away, lumping them together and sort of putting them out of sight of the main population, whether they are labeled retarded or mentally ill or African-American or whatever, or poor or whatever. And I'm just wondering, aside from the issues of convenience of having a group called homeless all together, convenience of them having one place to get services perhaps, and convenience perhaps for the staff or for the city services or something, what benefit exactly does it do for the human spirit and growth and all the things that we hope for, to be lumped together, one kind of labeled people?
Well, I think you make an excellent point. We tend to categorize different people in various ways just to kind of deal with it. Sometimes things get so complicated and diverse that it's really hard to keep up with everything. And I think you make a good point. And if you look at the homelessness situation, each homeless person is different. And when you think about the safe haven, the tent community in particular, you got a group of people who police themselves. They will oust people in their community who do not follow the rules, which you can't say for every group of homeless people. So I think the caller is definitely correct in saying that there is a sense of missing individualism that we kind of perpetuate sometimes, just strictly because we can't kind of deal with it all at one time.
Since we are talking about a situation that has been in the public eye because of the Safe Haven tent community, we might indicate that they've been getting some support from graduate students at the university, faculty, as well as people in the community in religious organizations, and particularly at this moment at St. Mary's Catholic Church, where Father Tom Royer is the priest. But there has been a broad response from the community of concern, I think.
Oh, indeed. And the response has been very generous, too. So it's there are a lot of people who obviously feel that the Safe Haven approach is worth supporting. And we've been receiving each day. We have people stop by to bring us clothing or blankets or food or money. So the response has been very, very good.
In 8 years of serving as a Mercy and Justice pastor in New Covenant, I've seen a tremendous amount of generosity in our community. Some people sometimes just don't know where to plug in or know how to help. But when the call is out there, I've seen tremendous response from our community, which is great.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the issues that you faced, Jeff, in your time at New Covenant Fellowship with that particular portfolio?
The issues usually are that the problems are so big that people don't know where to start.
Sure.
It's kind of like having that 50-page paper due in a week and you haven't started it yet. and that's usually the first place people go. I try to encourage people to still face it anyway, even though it's really too big, because I think that's when we start to get on our knees and really call on God to help us face these problems. And then we realize that God is bigger than all of this, and that in some way or another, He can give us direction and guidance as to what are our individual roles in responding to the many problems that we see out there.
We're down to our last 7 or 8 minutes. Let me give the phone numbers again if people would like to join the conversation. 333-9455 for local callers in the Champaign-Urbana area. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. As we talk about the situation for people who are homeless, in Champaign particularly, but also around the country. Father Tom, did you have any objection within your congregation when you offered a place on parish property for homeless people to set up tents? And
no objections that I've heard.
Not at all.
No.
Now, your congregation had provided sanctuary before locally, apart with in cooperation with some other congregations.
Right. That was back in the 80s. Uh-huh. There were five parishes, and that included McKinley, where you were pastor. And it's interesting how one thing leads to another, one ministry leads to another. And it was from that sanctuary program that we eventually then had this sister relationship with a community in El Salvador. So it's interesting how once you become involved, you find other ways to continue the work.
And New Covenant Fellowship in the 80s also was very instrumental through one of its through pastoral leadership and volunteers in setting up the men's emergency shelter for the homeless that was here locally and then became the Times Center.
That's great.
And then in accepting government money became a little bit more narrow in who it would accept. and we might mention that some of the other religious groups that provide shelter, such as Salvation Army, what's the group up on the other group, I'm blanking on the name of it, but there are a couple of very Christian groups.
Restoration
Urban Ministry.
Right, that's right.
Where if you're willing to put up with hearing a lot of Christian talk and their attempts to convert you, you can stay there for a while too. But there are those problems. We have a couple callers waiting. Line number one, yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
Hi. The discussion earlier about rights to health care and livelihood and that, the U.S. is sort of in an ambiguous position as far as the U.N. Charter on that, but it's certainly a relevant thing, and I think we actually caveat the economic rights. But I come at it from a very secular point of view, but it seems to me I'm also know that when the lunches at the worker house were terminated, it also terminated access for this group that was doing both, the Food Not Bombs, the idea of having a free feed for people in a park somewhere, so that with the idea of trying to highlight the broader issue of you know, what America's priorities are, what the U.S. priorities are, rather, and put it in a broader context. It seems to me that, you know, that's something that religious and secular people can have a coalition on, and it seems to me it's a shame that also has gone by the board. So I'd just like to hear your reaction to that, and since it's quite to the end of the show, I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Any response to some of the secular programs like Food Not Bombs that have been providing resources for people in need?
Well, I think any help that is given is certainly welcomed, and I think that the people involved should in some way be in collaboration to assist and to encourage what they're doing.
And we have another caller waiting on line two, also from Champaign. Go ahead, please.
Hello. What happens to homeless people when it's winter and snowing and when they get sick? That's my question. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Unfortunately, what happens is that they may go by the wayside and die, and we will never know that it ever happened. Fortunately, I know the First Presbyterian Church in Champaign and the United Methodist Church in Champaign, they both have started emergency winter shelter in particular for overflow of the regular shelters just for that reason. But yeah, again, a lot of those people that we just don't see just out of sight, out of mind, and they're suffering. And unfortunately, it's a sad situation, but that's what's happening.
And there have been deaths. We know people who have died from exposure in this community, and it's so it's very serious.
Yeah,
very sad. At a meeting we had recently, there was someone there who is knowledgeable and said that she knew of probably some 10 who were living outside last winter. So that's only probably scratches the surface. There's a lot of people who just don't have a place to stay.
Yeah. And particularly with the economy, people can have part-time jobs with no benefits,
right.
No health insurance, some salary, but not enough to be able to pay an apartment rent. Often you have to pay the first month, the last month, a security deposit.
Yeah. And don't forget the background checks. So if you have any bad history, you're probably not going to get into a lot of places.
But even if you have perfect history, if you lose your job and all you've got is part-time, maybe your family can help you and maybe not.
Right.
If you have family around.
That's right. We're talking with Father Tom Royer from St. Mary's Catholic Church in Champaign and Reverend Jeff Trask. Tell us your title again, your specialty in
I'm a social pastor, but I'm a pastor of mercy and justice, which is kind of unique because in the covenant, you know, we believe so much in mercy and justice, they actually pay a staff person to really focus in on that, and that's what I'm able to do. Yeah.
Tell us some of the other things you do, Jeff.
I'm involved with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Advocacy for Justice Committee, which is a group that gives away scholarships to students going to college. I'm involved with projects and doing empty tomb roofing projects over the summer with our church. The Champaign County Christian Health Center has been a huge piece of what I've done through New Covenant Fellowship as well. It's been a number of organizations because of the freedom that the church gives me to be involved that I've been able to participate in and get our congregation to participate in as well.
And Father Tom, you should remember one of those seven deadly sins, envy. Don't envy New Covenant for having five pastors doing what you have to do as one priest.
It's great what they're doing at New Covenant. I've had contact with them over the years. They're great people. Great.
We have another caller, this time from Urbana on line one. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling. I've been involved with historical preservation in the Urbana district, and a lot of the churches have expanded over the decades and demolished the older houses, and I just wonder, what do you think about people that have neighboring houses you didn't buy a house to be near a campground. Why don't you respond to that? I mean, why don't you relocate the churches out to the zoning area where you could set up a campground?
So here's someone who's saying there are the rights of the people who have homes near churches who didn't choose when they bought that house to be near a campground, and so they're perhaps next to St. Mary's. Do you need to be concerned with the rights that those people have?
Oh, indeed, right. But in the case of St. Mary's, the neighbors to the north are the sisters involved with the Provena Hospital. They're in complete agreement with it. To the west, there's a parking lot. To the south, it's me. It's there. And then across
your rectory.
And then across the street is Provena Hospital. So I don't think that really is an issue in our case. Uh-huh. And when the tents were set up, they you know, it happens there's trees and bushes around. Some people came by looking for it and couldn't find it, but it was there. I mean, there was like five tents up, but you really had to look hard to see them. So it really was not any visual eyesore. And when they wanted to bring in a porta potty, I said, let's not do that. They'll use the parish center because I think that's a kind of a visual thing that we don't want to have around. But
sure.
That's not a problem with St. Mary's.
Well, let me thank our guests and our many callers today. It's a very hot topic and a very crucial topic for people who are concerned about poor folks. We've been talking about the homeless with Father Tom Royer from St. Mary's Catholic Church and with Reverend Jeff Trask from New Covenant Fellowship, both in Champaign. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. Let me repeat the phone number for people who might like to volunteer at the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen that's serving food Monday through Friday at noon at New Covenant Fellowship. The number is 377-4776 in area code 217. Coming up on Keeping the Faith next week, we'll be talking with a theologian from Chicago, Bob Cathy, C-A-T-H-E-Y, about his new book on post-liberal perspective, God in Post-Liberal Perspective. We'll be talking about the homeless again in 2 weeks with Ed Cherna, who's the executive director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, talking about this issue as it affects the huge city and metropolitan area of Chicago. So that's on September 20. Ed Cherna, S-H-U-R-N-A, executive director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless. Don Nolan will be our guest host, interviewing Reverend Elaine Olson, who has moved from psychotherapy to being a Lutheran pastor at St. Andrew's Lutheran Church in Champaign, a new position for her. So he'll be talking with her on September 27th. Bill Timaeus and Rabbi Jack Chikorian will be our guest on Keeping the Faith October 4th. Thank you for listening. We'll be talking with you again next week.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.